Hi, Kelly Sanders. Welcome to KBOO.
It's great to be here. Thank you for the invitation.
Kelly Sanders does research in the Department of Civil and Environmental Engineering at the University of Southern California, well known in football circles as USC. It's in downtown Los Angeles. Her specialties include water and energy, both of our systems in this country now in crisis, and needing a rapid change, to say the least. She was one of the principal investigators and reporters of a study by the National Renewable Energy Lab, a spokesman for their report. It's titled LA 100, the Los Angeles 100% Renewable Energy Study, 100% by 2045. It describes itself as, I quote, the most comprehensive, detailed study to model an entirely renewable-based power system as complex as LA's. LA is one of some 46 long-established and very successful public agencies in California, including also in Sacramento and San Francisco, and they serve a little over 25% of California customers. In Los Angeles, the public utility is lodged in the LA Department of Power and Water. This is by far the best-known public utility on the planet because its early efforts inspired the movie Chinatown and a whole lot of books. Like the other public utilities, DPW, Department of Power and Water, run some of their own generation plants, some in fact still running coal. They also buy electricity on national market, mostly in long-term contracts, and they own and manage all the electric substations and lines in the city of Los Angeles. In addition to that, over the last 10 years or so, public agencies in California, cities and counties, pursuant to a very favorable state law, they've taken over the responsibility to supply electric power into their area. In fact, today, therefore, over 50% of California electricity customers are served by public agencies. Now the DPW, and near all of them across California, they've embarked on reconstructing their energy system towards all renewable. And to reduce the capital costs of setting up a mostly new system, they are also promoting energy conservation and use reduction to a varied extent. And why do that? Because less energy you use, the less capital costs of building out a new system. Kelly Sanders, after that long introduction, tell us about what Los Angeles and the DPW may well do to implement the plan that you and other scientists and engineers have developed in conjunction with the National Energy Lab and, of course, the city and its electricity energy, the famous Department of Power and Water. Kelly Sanders, tell us about the plan.
Yeah, so just to give you a little bit of background on the charge of this plan, California has pretty aggressive renewable energy goals. So a few years ago, we passed what was called Senate Bill 100, and this requires that 100% of electricity sales be renewable or zero carbon by 2045. And so as a response to that, the city of Los Angeles, in conjunction with the Los Angeles Department of Water Power, its municipal utility, commissioned a study. So this was done, as you said, by the National Renewable Energy Laboratory and a few academics like myself. And so this represents the work of dozens and dozens of analysts and modelers and technical people and policy people, basically trying to ask the question, how does Los Angeles get to that target of 100% renewable energy? So what this plan basically does is it puts together a few scenarios. Some of the scenarios are indeed 100% renewable. Some of the scenarios allow us to have a little bit of natural gas generation. Some scenarios allow us to have biofuels. Other scenarios don't allow us to have biofuels. So the basic concept is we put together all of these scenarios just to see what the trade-offs would be for the city of Los Angeles if it took path A versus path B versus path C. So we looked really heavily at the technical challenges of the project. So how do you balance a grid that is very high in terms of its penetration of intermittent solar and wind resources But we also looked at the air emission benefits that would be incurred to the city and where those air pollution benefits might be, for example. We also looked at some of the job ramifications of this bill. Would it cost jobs or would it cause a net amount of jobs to be created? And then the general overall economics of the plan. So I was more on the technical side. So I looked a lot at the electricity system, how this might get implemented, and also the impacts on the water system. Because as your listeners might know, here in the city of Los Angeles, we currently get 90% of our water from faraway places, Northern California and the Colorado River. So importing that water comes at the expense of a lot of energy. It also has some vulnerabilities if we were to ever have a big earthquake. So as a reaction to that, the same Department of Water and Power also has a very aggressive water sustainability plan that needed to be integrated with this energy sustainability plan. So I worked a lot on kind of the coordination of those two sectors and what that might look like over the long term.
What were your findings? I think most of us are interested in a program which cities and population centers all over, not just the United States, but other places, take on the responsibility. It has to happen partly at the local level and by really building popular forces that demand it. You don't get kind of social change we're thinking about without popular forces. Since it's a matter really of saving the planet and their children and grandchildren, it seems to me quite possible. But the idea is to create agencies that build out local power in their area. Not to say that some big plants aren't necessary, they are surely necessary in a place like L.A., but even those big plants could be very near the point of use, near meaning within 100 miles, and not needing a big, humongous grid, just a regular grid. And also with the knowledge that we are saving ourselves and our children and people around the world, we could build the kind of culture of energy conservation and use reduction that would limit the time necessary to build out this system, and time is now of the essence, say the climate scientists, and also limit the amount of capital costs and the amount of resources that are required to completely reconstruct an energy system using sun and wind and various other sources of wave and geothermal. But sun and wind are going to be central, and they're very cheap and getting cheaper. What's your view of that possibility of mostly local energy developing this sort of democratic community and culture?
You really identified one of the key and central questions to what this renewable energy transition looks like. On one hand, you have this distributed model, which you describe, where a home might have solar panels on its roof and an electric car that uses that solar panel, you know, to charge. And that electric car also becomes storage so that it can store energy when the sun isn't available, for example. You also have things like hydrogen resources. So you can use electrolysis technology, you know, basically split a water molecule with wind and solar and create hydrogen, which is another form of storage. So one of the challenges, of course, with wind and solar that we haven't had with some of our more conventional power plants is the fact that these plants aren't inherently dispatchable. So with a coal plant or a nuclear power plant, of course, you can turn it on and off. With the wind and the sun, it becomes a little bit more difficult to balance. So in this particular study, we did look a lot at the overall potential for rooftop solar. So building out this solar system that you're talking about on rooftops was a really central element of it. And we did a very detailed analysis at National Renewable Energy Laboratory of how much roof space there is, et cetera, et cetera. So the distributed part of this equation, as you alluded to, is critical. if because nothing else, it also engages the customer in the generation and consumption of these resources. So distributed grids will absolutely be a part of this. And I think they're particularly timely in the West and in California because of the wildfires that we've been experiencing. So here in California, utilities are actually voluntarily shutting down the grid such that customers might not have access to electricity for a few hours, and in the worst case, it's lasted for up to a few days. A more distributed grid where you have wind or you have solar and you have storage would allow customers to stay online, to have access to electricity, even if you have a greater grid outage, whether that outage be because of wildfires or whether that outage be because of a storm or et cetera. So distributed is certainly a big part of the puzzle. One of the tricky things about distributed solar is it's actually a lot more expensive than utility scale solar. So building out large arrays of solar panels in the desert, for example, is actually much cheaper per unit of electricity generated than putting solar on your house. Some of that is because of reduced construction costs when you're building the array. Some of it is people aren't necessarily very good at cleaning their solar panels, and your solar panels are only as good as they are clean. So there's some maintenance and upkeep issues there that might decrease the efficiency of the solar as well. So I really see it as a dual solution. I think the distributed grid is really, really important, particularly for reliability in a world where we have a lot more extreme events. But I also think that there might be value to building out some of our transmission infrastructure because, like I said before, the wind isn't always blowing and the sun isn't always shining. So what a very, very large regional grid gives us access to is a diversity of renewable resources. So, for example, in the middle of the country, we have gigantic wind resources, but we really don't have enough people there to even be able to utilize all those wind resources. So if you built really long transmission corridors from the middle of the country out to the coast, you could more equitably distribute those resources. The same thing with solar. You know, the sun isn't always shining in Seattle, for example, but it might be shining a lot more in Arizona. So you could kind of leverage some of the geographic diversity to bring renewables to different parts of the country more equitably. Obviously, building out all those transmission lines, it has trade-offs. You know, you have the ecosystem impacts. These renewable installations have been very contentious here in California because of impacts to the desert tortoise population, for example. Any sort of energy infrastructure is going to have environmental impacts. But having a more distributed grid that spans many different corridors also reduces some of the need for batteries. So batteries themselves aren't that sustainable. You know, you still need to mine the resources to develop the batteries. You have to manufacture the batteries. So creating more of a diverse grid also reduces some of the storage that you might need because you can import and export renewables. Basically, the Reader's Digest of that very long answer is it's probably going to be a hybrid solution between a nice local distributed grid where people are generating and consuming their own solar electricity and some of that utility scale renewables where we are moving those resources from where the renewables exist to the big demand centers.
I particularly liked your comments about reliability of local energy, because the grid can often be interrupted by the many, many, many things, the huge floods, and to get electricity from Nebraska, which in fact is a whole, from Nebraska to L.A. is an arduous task, and you lose electrons. But surely it's necessary in some ways, but we don't have to rebuild an entire huge intercontinental grid at enormous expense, environmental including, as you pointed out, has to go over farmland, it has to go over rivers, forests, forest fires can put it out. We don't need put so many resources into those grids, which are necessary and which we, in fact, do have. And I'm happy you talked about the regional, because I think the vision is not just Antarctic City living on its own. It's a city confederated with all of its adjacent cities and in some ways under the discipline and responsibility of a regional authority that can, in fact, make sure that things are equitable. So there is a lot of national and international sort of cooperation that's necessary. Yet still the city seems to me to be so important. I think in cities you have a much better chance of creating a culture of conservation where people have a stake in reducing energy. They have a financial stake and a economics place-based incentive. The shape of the system seems to me to be clear in what you said. That is a cooperation, but a lot of emphasis on the city and how it operates. This is the Old Mole Variety Hour on cable radio, 90.7 FM Portland. Kelly Sanders teaches in the Department of Civil and Environmental Engineering at USC, the University of Southern California in downtown Los Angeles. He was a principal investigator in a study by the National Renewable Energy Lab. It's titled LA 100, the Los Angeles 100% Renewable Energy Study. We've been talking about the study and plan, and particularly the balance it has to achieve between locally produced energy and bringing electricity from the grid, and the need for an enormous amount of cooperation amongst energy agencies. No city is an island on its own. The costs are going to be enormous, although it will, of course, create a huge number of jobs, jobs that are contributory to all of our living. People can be proud to work. But replacing the whole fossil fuel structure is going to take time and money. And it seems to me that conservation and use reduction, which, in fact, the Europeans use half the amount of energy that we do, partly it's because of the transportation systems and the concentration of the huge land mass of the U.S., but it's also because in the U.S. we waste vast amounts of energy. It seems to me that one of the things that we have to do in the next 10 years, say the climate scientists, are we really risk disaster, is to reduce energy use and conserve the energy we have. Does the plan talk about that, about how L.A. has to kind of create that culture where people, as much as they hate tobacco, that they hate the greenhouse gas emissions even more?
Yeah, the consumer's role in this was a big focus point for this study. And as you relayed in your comments, energy conservation is absolutely critical. So we ran a few scenarios, some with limited energy conservation, and then, you know, more aggressive scenarios where we really tapped, you know, energy conservation from a very, very aggressive standpoint to see what might be possible. The other part of that, since you brought it up, is the consumer's participation in electricity generation and consumption. So historically, we've lived with a grid where, you know, you basically turn on your lights, you use your microwave, you run your dishwasher, whenever you want. You don't really think about the grid conditions in terms of when you use your energy use. Moving forward, the customer is going to become a much more proactive part of this equation. So here in California, for example, in the middle of the day, we often have so much solar, we can't even use it. Sometimes we just end up dumping solar energy because we don't have enough demand to utilize those resources. So a solution to that would be if everyone would decide to use their dishwashers, to run their dishwashers at 12 noon or 2 p.m. in the afternoon rather than at 6 p.m. when everyone's coming home and using their electrical appliances, they would actually be contributing to balancing those solar resources. So that's something called demand response. So in the future, customers are going to have financial incentives to try to prompt them to use more electricity when renewables are available and use less electricity when renewables aren't available. So in that case, your customer is actually kind of acting like a battery in some ways, because we're aligning our consumption to the availability of wind, to the availability of solar. And that's really going to help in this effort to integrate these high penetrations of intermittent resources. In terms of this idea of this distributed solar that you lay out, the state of California is already trying to promote that vision. So all of our new homes, all of our new single family homes, are now mandated to have solar on them. And as you can imagine, it's been a contentious plan and it's been delayed a little bit. But the idea is that every new single family home that's built in California from here on out will have solar on it. So this distributed vision for solar is absolutely critical to California's success with this. But, you know, for cities in particular, distributed solar is likely to be only part of the solution. Los Angeles is really lucky because we are a high solar resource city. But all of that being said, we also have a lot of people here. We have a lot of multifamily buildings. We do have some dense high rises. So you also have to just make sure that you have the actual area to put some of these renewable resources, which tend to be a little less dense than some of their fossil fuel counterparts. It might be a challenge in some cities that are less sunny or that are less windy to do all of this job locally. Conservation will be huge in this. Energy efficiency will be huge in this in terms of bringing our overall energy loads down. But there might be a need for more of a hybrid solution in cases where you can't generate 100% of your renewables locally within a very small footprint, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
Kelly, I think we've covered a lot of ground. There's a number of other things that I had on my agenda to talk about, like the transportation system and the way we can save a huge amount of energy through alternative transit. And there's also the need to radically change the way we do agriculture. Kelly, we can't talk about everything, but we've talked about the importance of cities and distributed energy and various kinds of sun and wind generation and storage. Thanks so much for talking to us. Keep up the good work.
Well, it was a pleasure to speak with you today, Bill. I appreciate the invitation.